Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast, presented by Capital Area District Libraries.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable. This episode, we'll be discussing a mix of 2018 picks and great gift picks for the upcoming holidays. Plus, we couldn't let Picture Book Month totally shoot by without a nod, and later in the show, we'll have a segment on some of our favorites, joined by Youth Services Librarian Tom Schultz from Okemos Library. But first, I'm Jessica Trotter, one of your cattle selectors, and I'm joined around the microphone by Mari Garza and Sherry McConnell.
Hello.
Hi there.
And it's that time of year where the best of lists are coming out. We're looking at our shopping lists for people. And there's just so much out there. So I kind of wanted to talk about what's on people's radar.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with a graphic novel. It's a young adult graphic novel. It's called On a Sunbeam. It's by Tilly Walden. And you may remember this author from last year.
I remember. Yeah.
There was also a graphic novel called Spinning. And this is like science fiction slash romance slash adventure. I really, really liked it because not only does it take place in space, but the images are just really beautiful. You could see floating ruins that maybe look like churches. There are spaceships that look like fish. It's just a really stunning, stunning reading. One of the other reasons I liked it is because it's kind of got two timelines going, and I like how the author uses different colors to kind of give the signal that now she's in this timeline.
Okay.
It's just a really, really, really neat read. So that's for young adults. And another one that I want to recommend for young adults is a nonfiction. It's called Be Unstoppable. It's by best-selling author Bethany Hamilton. You may remember Bethany as the girl who lost her arm to a shark while surfing.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how many years ago this happened, but she has an incredible comeback story. And I liked it. You know, there's a lot of books right now about empowering girls and really encouraging girls and young women to be the very best they can be and to have absolutely no limits. And this is just another title in a very long line of a very promising future of books that are going to be published with that theme in mind, to be the best you can be. Mm-hmm. Really good pictures in that one, too.
Okay.
All right, sure. This is Sherry, and I'm going to talk about some nonfiction and thinking of nonfiction books for the holiday season or just any time. I was looking for some feel-good books, and there have been so many political books out there and so many partisan political books out there that one that I really like that is... It's about the White House, but it's not about politics. And it's called, it came out this summer, and it's called From the Corner of the Oval by Becky Dory Stein. And it's about by answering a Craigslist ad, she becomes the stenographer for President Obama.
no
yes,
way.
Yes, she answers
such
a Craigslist ad. Yes, can you believe that? Which I find funny to begin with. But it's about working in the White House and the Oval Office, and because she's President Obama's official stenographer, she has to be in the room at all times with a recorder and you know, ready to record what he says. But it's about the casual life behind the scenes. It's also about her love life. She talks about the people that she meets while working at the White House and about, you know, how she feels at the end of the Obama administration because she's there. And so it's about the White House, but it's not about politics. So it's a fun read. Another one that I want to mention is by one of my favorite nonfiction authors, Cy Montgomery, and it's called How to Be a Good Creature. And this is her memoir in 13 Animals. And to explain that, she writes children's books about animals. She writes adults books about animals. One of my favorites is The Good, Good Pig, about her pet pig, Christopher Hogwood. She was a National Book Award finalist for The Soul of an Octopus. And she mentions her Octavia the Octopus and Christopher in this book, but the book is reflecting on her life through the animals that she associates with. And so she says right up front in The Good, Good Pig that she prefers the company of animals to the company of humans. And so And so it's clear in this book that she lovingly describes the animals that she has met along the way. She mentions in one of the vignettes in this book that when she realized as a little girl that she was incapable of having a litter of puppies and that she would have to have babies instead of puppies, she decided that she just wasn't going to have children at all. And she and her husband have always had animals. And so this is just a great book. And I just love her her descriptions. In a chapter about Tess, her border collie. She talks about how Tess constantly is laying joy in their laps because Tess was always the one to give her and her husband study breaks from their work because they both worked at home. So a really nice, great, light, feel-good read.
Okay, I've got a couple I want to go with right up front, one of which I just finished, and I will tell you, I'm a Lin-Manuel Miranda fan. I'm a follower on Twitter. I hear these things in his voice, but if you haven't checked out Good Morning, Good Night, it's Good Morning, Good Night, Little Pep Talks for Me and You by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and it's illustrated by Johnny Sun. And if you're familiar with his Twitter account, Lin got into the habit sometime in the last year of doing essentially affirmations morning and night. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're related. Sometimes it's only a word or two different. But I can't explain personally why, but they've have hit a note with me sometimes when I need them most. I can tell, I was telling Sherry earlier, I read through it and I can't even go back to whichever one it was, but one of them hit me enough that I was tearing up. And kind of, you know, Lansing has Hamilton coming to the area next year. I also have enough friends who are dealing with loss lately that some of the pep talks in this just really hit home. He's been on Late Night Talk, and so there's actually, you can go out and hear a clip of him talking about, but the one that's just really hit with a lot of people is, it goes, "Good morning, you are so loved and we like having you around." He ties one end of the sentence to your heart, the other end to everyone who loves you, even the ones you haven't heard from for a while. Checks not. There, stay put, you. And then the goodnight is, "You are so loved and we like having you around." Ties one end of the sentence to your heart, the other end to everyone who loves you in this life, even if clouds obscure your view. Checks not. There, stay put, you. Tug if you need anything. And they're cute. They're not over the top. They're not too sappy, but they just are really nice messages for morning and night. And it's, I don't know, they've hit a nerve with a lot of people. I think it's be a fabulous gift book for teachers, mm-hmm. your friendly librarian, you know, any of these. I just they're just nice.
Well, I'm also a fan of Johnny Sun as well. I follow him on Twitter, and he's an illustrator, and he makes these simple line illustrations. And last year he had a book out about this lovable alien who finds himself on Earth and is trying to figure out, you know, what life on Earth is all about. But it's very whimsical. And so I'm not surprised that they paired up. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it must be a delightful
book.
Well,
and the one that I read, I mean, it's a line drawing, and it's just sort of, it's got the, "You are so loved and we like having you around," but it's basically, it's a big interweaving. And it's just that, you know, trying to emphasize to somebody that you're part of a big network. You may not see it, but you're there. And we're thinking of you, and stick around.
Yeah.
And given some of the events that have happened in the Lansing area recently, this one just sort of hit. I must have been reading it kind of right at the right time. So I've got, again, enough people who are dealing with loss right now that this one just sort of hit for me. Totally in a different direction. For those people who are series completists and must wait until a series is ended before they go and pick up a book, I'm pretty sure I haven't talked about this here before, but there is a series by Martha Wells called The Murderbot Diaries. The first book is All Systems Red. I'm pretty sure you've heard me talk about it before. first book is All Systems Red, and then there's three other ones, Artificial Condition, Rogue Protocol, and Exit Strategy. And they're all told from the point of view of a security android who has basically hacked its system. It no longer actually has to respond to any commands. It was actually part of some terrible event prior to this, in which it was a bunch of systems went crazy and a number of people in a camp on some planet were killed, and this system was part of that. But he's been supposedly, I keep saying he, I apologize, it's been supposedly rewritten, it's totally fine, except that something happened so that it was able to crack its way out of the system. It can do whatever it wants, and what it really wants to do is download and watch
cat videos.
No, close. Soap operas.
Telenovela soap operas?
Yes. I mean, the whole range. It just wants to spend its time doing nothing as much as possible.
Rock on, robot.
Exactly. However,
don't we all feel like that?
However,
sometimes,
he keeps getting put on these trips and missions where he is meant to be a security unit, and people get into trouble because that's just what they do on other planets, evidently. So it finds itself having to save people periodically, and really, you know, it's just, the series is fabulous. It's just, it's sort of jaded security unit that really just wants to go off on its own. But it has a lot of questions about what happened before, and the company that used to control it. It still thinks it controls it, but it doesn't. And it really does keep going back to how much it really just wants to download and binge watch.
Does it have a favorite soap opera?
Yes, and I'm not going to be able to come up with it off the top of my head, but it does. And they're mostly dramas. They have very little to do with he doesn't want to see things with security units, or it's really is the soap opera style dramas that it wants to watch. And it's a neat character, and the four novellas are a complete story. And if you do enjoy it, Martha Wells actually does have a contract for another book to come out next year. So a full-length novel.
Nice.
And they're novellas. So, I mean, it's if you don't like the first one, try again, because you really should like it. But if you don't like the first one, you know, you don't have to read all four. Maddie, do you want to?
Yeah. So I'm going to stick with nonfiction for now anyway. Do you have a 13-year-old, 12-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old that you are hoping will begin cooking dinner for you? I'm going to recommend the complete cookbook for young chefs. This is something put out by America's Test Kitchens. And I'm actually amazed that cookbooks in JNF or juvenile nonfiction do so well. But they are really getting checked out. Maybe it is parents checking them out, wanting to see what's out there. But this is a book that has over 100 kid-tested and kitchen-tested recipes. Some desserts, I think like 25 desserts maybe. And I don't know about you, but I just love the thought of having children cook. And I see, at least in my own family, more and more children being interested in coming up with their own creations and serving them. It's one I really like. And it's also on a bestseller list right now. So I would promote that one. And the other one I'm thinking of talking about is called Dinosaur. It's by Dan Kanan and Kathy Wallen, I think it is. And it's kind of like a coffee table book maybe, but it's got sort of some 3D pictures of dinosaurs that sort of move in some ways. And I just think it was sort of like a little, you know, mini visit to a natural history museum, if you will. It's part of a series. This author also does one on safaris and jungles. There's another one with the word wild in it. Just a really nice read with great photographs, moving photographs. So,
Okay, well, I'll add a couple more to the nonfiction list. This is Sherry. And I think, I just realized, I think I've mentioned this before, the library book by Susan Orlin. And again, it's part crime detective novel because she starts out with the fire that consumed the Los Angeles Public Library in the mid-1980s. And so the story goes back and forth between the Los Angeles Public Library and just how it was founded and how it was built, and to the detectives' efforts to solve the crime and who started, because they know it was arson, but they trying to find the person who did it and catch the person who did it, to just how wonderful libraries are. And so again, in my theme of feel-good books, I believe that the library book is one of them. And in one section of the book, she talks about how there has been a resurgence or an interest in becoming a librarian. And that, like, library schools notice that the ages of the people applying to become librarians was dropping. The people that were applying to library school were younger, even in their 20s and 30s, and they were coming from various backgrounds, art, science, business, and the people that came in, the reason why they were interested in becoming librarians is because they were drawn to a profession that combined information management with public good, that they could do mm-hmm. something, that they had a job that they could feel good about. And Susan Orlin writes about the joys of being a librarian. The new younger interest in the profession has changed it already. There is a comic book series about a librarian, an action figure of beloved Seattle librarian Nancy Pearl. Dozens of library blogs, including one called The World's Strongest Librarian, and a sense that being a librarian is an opportunity to be a social activist, championing free speech and immigrant rights and homelessness concerns while working with the Dewey Decimal System. So to be a librarian is to have it all. So again, a love letter to libraries and being a librarian is in this book, The Library Book by
and
Susan Orlin.
No, we're not biased at all.
And the last book I'm going to mention is called We Fed an Island, The True Story of Rebuilding Puerto Rico One Meal at a Time, by Jose Andres and Richard Wolff. And Jose Andres is a James Beard award-winning chef, Michelin-starred chef, but he is also the founder of a neighborhood kitchen network, World Central Kitchen. And this book is about his efforts after Hurricane Maria to he went to Puerto Rico to see what he could do to help feed the people there. And so the book is about his efforts to organize a community kitchen to feed people, but it also talks about Puerto Rico's economy before and after the hurricane, and about the other efforts to bring relief from other organizations and what worked and what didn't. And it's a feel-good book, but it's also a book about a disaster and people's efforts to help themselves. I recommend this book too.
Okay, I think I'm going to close it out with one last one, and that's Diane Sutterfeld, who wrote The 13th Tale, has a new book coming out, and it's been a while since she's put something out. And her new one is actually, it's due out on the 4th of December, I believe. It's called Once Upon a River and this is on a dark and stormy night in a pub on the Thames. There is the pub is popular for storytellers, and they're middle of a storytelling session when the door's flinged open and a guy falls in, and he's carrying something and nobody knows what it is. And they figure out it looks like a dead child. they think it's a dead child, so they get to him, they try to help him, then they realize the child isn't dead. But she certainly looked it before, but she's not now. So begins a very strange tale in which five families all think the girl must belong to them. Four families and possibly the ghost ferryman. I'm sorry.
Oh.
The fifth family is the possible ferryman of the Thames in this particular area who made an arrangement with the devil, I believe, when he lost his child many years ago. And so possibly it's his daughter as well. So, but there are other families vying for this child. And it's just it's a really interesting character study. It's whether or not there is a ghostly element to it or not. And it's just a well-told, interesting story. And I'm going to finish up on that one. A lot of great books, ladies. We have next our segment on picture books. And that's going to be Sherry and Maddie and Tom Schultz. And I'm hoping one of them will talk about So Tall Within, Sojourner Truth's Long Walk Toward Freedom.
I love that book. That was beautiful.
By Gary Schmidt and illustrator Daniel Linter. So, on you go. And coming up next, our segment on picture books with Youth Services Librarian Tom Schultz and Maddie and Sherry.